You're listening to Extinct, a podcast about dead things. I'm Alice Leggett. Together, we'll explore the stories of species that have existed over millions of years, from the earliest forms of life to those that died out more recently, as well as modern biodiversity loss and conservation initiatives. Hello, you're listening to Extinct. In this episode, we shine a spotlight on the devastating fish die-offs in the Murray-Darling Basin and whether these are symptomatic of wider problems. The Murray-Darling Basin is Australia's largest and most iconic river system and is one of the biggest in the world. It spans over 1 million kilometres, including 77,000 kilometres of rivers and more than 25,000 wetlands. The Murray-Darling plays a vital role in supporting the country's diverse ecosystems and supports around 40% of Australia's agricultural produce. Also, the Murray-Darling is home to a number of distinct native species, many of which are endangered. In 2018 and 2019, a significant loss of fish in the basin was seen in three mass die-off events over a 40-kilometre stretch. Then, in March 2023, the Menindee Lakes area was hit with the worst mass kill event recorded in the region, which saw millions of dead fish surface in the river system. To tell us more about these fish die-offs and their impact, and some of the wider issues in relation to the health of the rivers, we have Director of the Centre for Ecosystem Science at the University of New South Wales, Professor Richard Kingsford. Professor Kingsford is a river ecologist and conservation biologist who specialises in Australia's wetlands ecosystems and conservation efforts and has worked a lot at Menindee Lakes. He is a member of the Biodiversity Council and has worked to inform river management policy in Australia. Professor Kingsford was a member of the Australian Academy of Sciences expert panel that investigated the 2018-2019 die-off event. Richard, thanks so much for joining us. Before we get into the fish die-off, what initially sparked your interest and led you to become involved in this particular area of research?
Look, I'm a river ecologist and a conservation biologist, so all things in relation to river health and the plants and animals that depend on rivers has always been something I've been interested in, particularly because we've done so much damage to those river ecosystems over the time that Europeans have been in Australia, and the colonisation processes and the building of dams and development of river systems have exacerbated some of the real problems we've seen in our rivers.
The problems that we're seeing in the rivers, these fish die-offs are, of course, very concerning, but what do we know about them in general?
Well, we know a fair bit about them, and we certainly have a pretty good idea of what the cause is, and that's really when the oxygen that fish need in the water, they can't get access to it. So it's really the lack of oxygen in that water. And that's caused by a range of different factors that essentially lead to various microbes being able to take that oxygen out of the water and leave it depleted, so that when things like fish and yabbies and turtles come along, there's no longer the oxygen that they need to breathe underwater and they die.
What actually happened in March 2023 and how does this compare to the significant 2018-2019 event?
Yeah, well, interestingly, they were sort of the two ends of a spectrum. The 2018-2019 event was in the middle of a drought, so there was hardly any water in the river system, whereas the March 2023, we'd just come out of a huge flood on the Darling, so there was lots of water in the river system. And so from that point of view, they were very different, but essentially they were the same cause in terms of that lack of oxygen, but the drivers were different in the sense that it was an extreme dry period. There was a very rapid temperature shift, and suddenly a whole lot of water with very little oxygen came up through the water column in the 2018-2019 fish kill, and essentially all the fish that were in that part of the Darling had nowhere to go and they died. Whereas this time it was the same issue in terms of a whole lot of water without oxygen going where the fish were. It was complicated in so far as there had been such a good flood that there was a lot of breeding. So there were a lot of new young fish and populations of native fish were high, but essentially those fish were not able to escape that very poor water, or sometimes what they call black water that comes down these rivers. The fish couldn't get away downstream and they couldn't get upstream because of the weir, the main weir, which is across the Darling River there, and they couldn't get into the Menindee Lakes, which would have had better quality. So same overall cause of lack of oxygen, but quite different scenarios.
With this lack of oxygen, what are the main factors that are contributing to these fish kills in the Murray-Darling Basin? And what are the implications of this for ecosystems and some of the other animals and plants that are in the Murray-Darling?
Well, it's really down to a natural process whereby what we call organic matter, but that's sort of leaves and branches and various animal parts that are in the catchment or on the floodplains get flooded. And then the natural decomposition process means a whole lot of microbes essentially start breaking down that matter. But in so doing, they're using up all the oxygen so that there's none left for the fish and things like yabbies and sometimes even turtles. So water without oxygen is really problematic for all of the animals that essentially rely on that river water coming down or wetland water, because it's that dissolved oxygen in the water that keeps everything going. Just as we need oxygen in the air, they need oxygen in the water. And when that's not there, that's a big problem. And the issue is exacerbated in big droughts when there's not a lot of flow in rivers and you get big blue-green algal blooms that can take the cyanobacteria, take that oxygen out of the water and deplete it so that native fish and even alien fish like carp can't exist. In a big flood system, you can get the same thing happening because there are lots of areas that are flooded. So that means areas that normally wouldn't get water would have lots of vegetation that's died or on the floodplain that gets submerged, and lots of bacteria then get stuck into it. And eventually that water becomes deoxygenated because there's so much biological breakdown activity going on. And that water can then flow back into the river system and be what they call a blackwater event. And it's like a killer flow coming down the river system. And so in this big flood system, one of the big challenges is, how did that happen? Where could the fish go? And they obviously couldn't go anywhere. And could we have avoided that with better management?
With these fish that have been found dead, what are some examples of the types of fish found in the Murray-Darling Basin and also the other species that live in this ecosystem that are also being impacted by these mass kills?
Yeah, well, most of them were probably bony herring, which is a native species, but also a lot of young carp, European carp. But there were also Murray cod there and golden perch, which are the other two main species in the Darling there, and all sorts of different ages. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're young or old as a fish, and if you've got no oxygen, you're not going to be able to survive. But it's likely other species like yabbies were affected. Yabbies also need that oxygen in the water, and even some microscopic crustaceans that we probably wouldn't see. Species like turtles can get away for a while and they can breathe air, so they're in better shape. And some of the things like water rats as well. But it's really the fish that we see this huge impact occurring on that group.
Anyone who's seen the photos that popped up in March 2023 and also towards the end of 2018 and in 2019, where you just see the whole water surface covered in these dead fish, it's pretty harrowing to think that there can be such a significant environmental change pretty much just overnight almost.
Yeah, look, I think it's dreadful. I mean, it's just hard to imagine that number of dead animals in a very short time, just lying on the top of the surface of the water like some sort of confetti. And we're talking millions, perhaps even tens of millions of fish that died. And so certainly for us that see photographs, it's impactful enough. But for people who live on the river in particular, and particularly First Nations people, it's really tough because they've got to deal with the sight of it as well as the smell of it, and then actually getting rid of all of that, as well as the sort of long-term impact on the river.
The well-being of the basin is definitely cause for concern here, but what do these events indicate about its overall health and the consequences of this for its ecosystem and the people around it, as you were saying before?
I guess fish kills have probably been a part of all rivers in Australia as they sort of dry out, but not quite at the sort of scale that we're seeing. So I think like a lot of the impacts of over-exploitation of our river systems that particularly occurs in the Murray-Darling, that we're really seeing a lot of those sort of symptoms of a sick river, and this is one of them. They come alongside things like declining water bird numbers, dead and dying river red gums that don't get enough flooding, black box that similarly don't get enough flooding. So those are all the bigger issues that come from using too much water in a river system and not allowing the natural flows and floods to go out that so many of the plants and animals rely on. And for the people living on the rivers, there's a deep sense of loss. Many people have seen the sort of decline of the health of the Darling in their own lifetimes, and a certain amount of powerlessness about what do you do about it, because so many of the causes of what's happening in these rivers are happening upstream in the tributaries that feed into the Darling River. And it's the ongoing development of those rivers over the last 50 or so years that's really starting to be demonstrated in these catastrophic type events that are exacerbated beyond what they normally would be.
Thinking about this development that you said is kind of happening upstream that's contributing to these issues, and in terms of especially human involvement with this, what do you think the sustainability or, I guess, trajectory of that is looking like if we continue current sort of practices that are contributing to this issue?
I think there is a lot that we still need to know about, for example, what's happening to the fish populations over time, particularly with such frequent mass killing events. And then I guess there's a longer term issue of how do we maintain as much water as possible in this river system. And the Murray-Darling Basin Plan, which has a centerpiece of it to return the flows to the river, is critical for the long term future, and the buyback of environmental flows or water that was diverted for irrigation back into the river as environmental flows is very important, and part of which is from willing sellers. But, you know, it's not easy. There are lots of people that depend on water. We're a very dry continent, and the issues of climate change are also going to make it even more difficult to manage this river system as temperatures rise, as more evaporation and probably drying out of river systems. And so we have to be really astute about the way we manage the water in the rivers. And I think we can't do the sort of things that we've done in the past. And we need to use the best available knowledge on the responses of these different plants and animals, and both short-term and long-term, to try and get to a sustainable place for the river.
With these distinct die-off events, the 2018-2019 event and the 2023 event, they're only 5 years apart, which is quite close. What sort of impact do you think it's likely to have in the long term, given the sharp decline in fish populations that we've had these two events, almost one after the other?
And one of the good things about fish populations is that they can build up very quickly if you get the right conditions. So we've had a good flood, so there'll still probably be quite a few fish in the river system. But it's really going to be what happens to some of those long-lived species like Murray cod that can live for decades, and how many of those have been affected, and are they breeding again? Is there enough flow in the future years to ensure that there are some of these species of native fish that are breeding more often, more frequently, and repopulating some of the holes in the river that have occurred as a result of these die-offs and the significant changes that have occurred, and at least try and stop the rate of decline and potentially even restore some of the original fish numbers that are in the river.
Speaking of these fish numbers, do you think it's possible we could be looking at potentially losing some of these fish altogether if we keep having events like this?
Look, there's little doubt that if you don't have water in a river, that then you're going to eventually lose fish. And the current thinking is that we only have probably 10% of the pre-European numbers of fish in our rivers. So that's native fish. So just a shadow of what they used to be. And in some rivers, we know that some of the threatened species are no longer there. So that means that we are constantly losing fish species from rivers. And it's largely to do with the way we're managing rivers and how much water we're using that's not there available for the health of the river system.
In terms of a future outlook for this, what sort of research and management areas need to be prioritised to hopefully prevent future die-offs like this?
Well, I think what we really need to know is we need to know what happens to the fish populations, particularly after these mass die-off events in the river. We then also need to know whether or not the fish are managing to bounce back. Are they breeding? What are the flows that they need for breeding? And some species depend on different types of flows. Some respond when there's a flow in the river. Some respond when there's a flow over the banks of the river and onto the floodplains. And then try and reinstate some of those natural flows in the system. We're never going to go back to these as natural rivers, but it is important to work out how much water we need at which times to ensure that we've got sustainable river systems in terms of the native fish species and a lot of the other plants and animals that depend on these rivers.
Thinking further about future-proofing as well, what actions can individuals, communities, and governments be taking to better support the protection and restoration of the Murray-Darling?
It's really about how do we best think about this as a whole river system. It's totally connected. So wherever you happen to be on the river, or if you're in the capital city, not on the river, the Murray-Darling is one of the big environmental issues that we as a nation have in front of us. So it is all about what happens to the Murray-Darling Basin Plan, what happens when the plan is reviewed and how well have we done and what has been the effect of adding environmental water, what have been the major policy failures in terms of things like floodplain harvesting that have not really adequately looked after the river system, and where is the future under hotter temperatures and more extreme rainfall. So those are all the things that are coming and we need to understand. In terms of individuals, really anybody can get involved in this and engage and talk to their politicians or the citizen science projects that are increasingly prominent across the Murray-Darling and opportunities there. And then from a community point of view, there are various groups that are increasingly active in terms of informing governments and industries about what needs to be done. I think we are all in the business of trying to find sustainability, whatever industry you happen to be working on. And so being able to work out what's needed for that is really important. And then obviously at the government level, there are lots of things that governments are doing and have been doing in terms of managing rivers, trying to find the sustainable sweet spot, which is very challenging when you've got a resource which is in such demand by different users. This is not a magic pudding. There's only so much of it to go around. And we know that we've taken too much water out of this river. And so managing what we've got left is very important.
Of course. Richard, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your insights with us about this. These are definitely great considerations to think about moving forward in terms of the longevity of this all-important resource and wonderful ecosystem.
No worries. I mean, I think it's a real challenge for us all, and the more people who are involved and engaged, the better.
Absolutely. Thank you, Richard.
Thanks very much.
You've been listening to Extinct. I'm Alice Leggett. If you want to hear more about dead things, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. And don't forget to leave a rating or review. It helps Extinct reach more people who are passionate about the planet's past and future. Until next time, stay curious.